Well, welcome to Good Morning Minnesota, and we are in the small but growing town of Sartell, Minnesota, in central Minnesota. We're here at a beautiful, relatively new building that is the headquarters for the Central Minnesota Boy Scouts, and we're here to help celebrate the centennial anniversary of this great city, and they're celebrating 100 years officially a little later this summer and fall, but they have a big weekend kickoff, and the mayor, Mayor O'Driscoll, who will be joining us a little later in the show, has invited us to come, and we were part of a community breakfast this morning, had a chance to share a few thoughts about the community and about our great state, and Brian McClung, our radio sidekick, is joining us here on Good Morning Minnesota. Good morning to you, Brian.
Well, good morning, Governor. Yeah, this is a great town. Sartell, people probably don't realize the explosive growth that's happened in Sartell, just a little bit north of St. Cloud. It's more than 13,000 people, approaching 14,000 people in this town, and they say 50% of the population of Sartell is German. So I'm mostly German. So there's some Germans here in the audience with us, and very excited to be here. And like you said, there's lots of great events here this weekend. Lots of events happening in the Twin Cities this weekend, too.
And in fact, one of the events that are taking place this weekend is going to be at the State Capitol Mall tomorrow at 2 a.m. We are dedicating the World War II, the Minnesota World War II Veterans Memorial. And it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful day, not only in terms of weather, but the ceremony we hope will be fitting and one that will be expressing our gratitude and appreciation for the World War II veterans in our state. And just people should know there were 326,000 Minnesotans who served during World War II. 40,000 or so, 45,000 or so still live in Minnesota. And 6,000 or so Minnesotans gave their lives in that world-changing and world-saving conflict. So the monument tomorrow that will be dedicated is beautiful, I think a fitting tribute to the men and women who served in that epic and historic struggle. But we also want to make sure that they know that we appreciate them and we remember them. And General Vesey, who's the former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, will be speaking. I'll be speaking as well as some others. But all are welcome to come. It's going to be, I think, a good turnout. Starts the program itself starts at 2 o'clock with a flyover, a World War II era flyover. And then the program, I think, goes for about an hour or a little more than an hour. And then there'll be time for socializing afterwards. But we invite everybody to come.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I think they're expecting more than 20,000 people at the state capitol for the event. If you want to come early at 10 a.m., they're doing a roll call of the 6,284 Minnesota servicemen and women who died during World War II. And that'll be really a wonderful tribute. And so events start at 10 a.m. if you want to come out there early. The formal program is at 2 p.m. There'll be a flyover of some World War II vintage aircraft. They're taking off from Anoka County Airport and then flying over the Capitol. So that's going to be fantastic and lots of great things going on. I saw them setting up outside of the Capitol over the last few days. It's going to be a really big and wonderful event.
And this comes on the heels, of course, of Memorial Day taking place recently and some other events around Minnesota also dedicated to remembering and honoring and thanking our veterans. Not far from here, we were in St. Cloud last weekend when they dedicated their Vietnam War Memorial. And as I've said before, the way that this country or some in our country treated our Vietnam veterans is shameful, and it should never happen again. But it's certainly not too late for all of us to try to say thanks and do our best to make up for that. And City of St. Cloud and the Vietnam Veterans Association related to that has done a great job putting up a memorial, had a wonderful community event. In fact, Mayor Kleiss from St. Cloud is here with us this morning. And that was a terrific ceremony as well. And then on Memorial Day, the First Lady and I and many others were around the state to dedicate other memorials and to give thanks. But to all Minnesotans, it's more than just our words. It's also hopefully our deeds, and I'm thankful to the legislature for passing on a bipartisan basis some great improvements to our veterans program and military support program in Minnesota. We've got a lot of returning soldiers coming back from Iraq, and so we hope, in addition to yellow ribbons and buying those support our military license plates when you renew your license plates or giving money to the Minnesota Family Foundation that supports you, can, if you're part of a community group and you want to actually raise your hand and volunteer to support a soldier or their family, you can go on my website, go to the First Lady's Family Care Initiative, and sign up your community group. It could be a Boy Scout group, a church group, a Girl Scout group, a chamber, a Rotary, a Kiwanis. Any community group can list itself on this website as being willing and able to do chores, acts of kindness, acts of love to families of military soldiers, shoveling the sidewalk, getting the grass mowed while these soldiers are gone. And then the families can find you on this website and call you when they are in need. It's a simple, easy thing to sign up for, but a profoundly important way to express gratitude and thanks.
And also, Governor, I know you talked about that as well. When you were in Litchfield this Wednesday, there was another deployment ceremony, and people may have seen that, but soldiers from dozens of Minnesota communities were participating in that deployment ceremony in Litchfield. It was the 849th Mobility Augmentation Company. They're headed to Camp Shelby and then over to Iraq, and a lot of people had a chance to see that, and that always helps spur people to get involved, to visit the governor's website, governor.state.mn.us, and click on that First Lady's Family Care Initiative to help out.
And let me also just preview some of the other things coming up this hour on Good Morning Minnesota, and thanks for listening in to the show. We're joined again by Brian McClung, Radio Sidekick. This is Governor Tim Pawlenty. We're at the Central Minnesota Boy Scouts headquarters and beautiful facility that they've opened up to us to broadcast the show, and joined by some local residents here that we'll perhaps hear from later in the show, too. But in just a few moments, we're going to be hearing from best-selling author, Amiti Schles. She has written a number of books, but her most recent book is called The Forgotten Man, Brian. It's kind of another look at the Great Depression from a different perspective, and one that I know that has kind of raised your curiosity.
Yeah, and Ms. Schles, she's been a columnist for Bloomberg News. She's written for the Wall Street Journal. She was the head of their editorial page, and so she's got a great background in writing about economics and kind of government involvement in the economy and how that can hurt or help, and so she's got a different perspective. And you know, as we've been talking about the events of World War II and the memorial dedication this weekend, this is a look at kind of what some of that generation went through before that, and a look at the Great Depression and how things went, how things were impacted by the government.
So Amiti Schles will be joining us in just a moment to talk about that book. But also after the break, we're going to be talking to the mayor of Sartell, Mayor O'Driscoll. He's going to talk a little bit about the history of this community. He's going to talk also about the centennial celebration. And then we got a very special guest, a Rick Stang. You know, part of our, it's inconsistent, but part of our great Good Morning Minnesota tradition is to ask a special guest to sing their high school fight song. So Rick Stang,
yes,
a former Marine, will be joining us here to sing the Sartell High School fight song. And we heard him sing this morning.
Yeah,
he can sing a little bit.
We understand he's really good. This is not the usual level of singing that we have on Good Morning Minnesota. So you don't turn off the radio show yet. This is going to be much better than you're used to.
Certainly better than when you sang I Got You, Babe.
Now, that my version of I Got You, Babe with Mary Bennett, who was our contest winner last year, I've heard that that's on some websites and it's being downloaded very frequently. It's really quite popular. And maybe not.
We may have to have a reprisal and have her back come up. But towards the end of the show, we'll take some questions or comments from our audience or from callers as well. But let's, Brian, talk just quickly before our first guest about some of the cleanup items from the legislative session, and we'll do more of that after our first guest as well. But one of the things that keeps coming up, of course, is the state's financial relationship with local units of government. And as we've mentioned in past shows, state has a program to give some cash to local units of government to help even out some of the uneven burdens that they face in terms of size or poverty or, you know, the impacts of regional centers. And there was an editorial in one of our leading newspapers recently about why can't St. Paul and Minneapolis do as well, and it's worthy of financial support, as Austin, Texas, and as Denver, Colorado, and as Seattle, Washington. And the implication of the editorial was that's why they need this additional LGA. And they do. Believe me, I support reasonable increases for LGA, and it got caught up with some other issues this year. But you've done a little research on how much state aid Austin, Texas, Denver, Colorado, and Seattle, Washington actually get. And maybe you want to share that with our listeners.
Yeah, I was looking into this, and, you know, this certain editorial page, they have city envy. They always, why can't we be more like Seattle or Portland or Denver, these cities? And they get caught up in that. And, of course, their answer is that the state should pour more money into those cities, and then they would be like all of these wonderful places. But if you actually look at Austin, Texas, Denver, Portland, and Seattle, those cities receive relatively little amounts of money from their state. The issue isn't that they're having the state dump money into those cities. Those cities are revitalizing on their own. They're doing their own things. And if you look on a broad per capita basis and how much money the state puts into these local units of government, in Minnesota per capita, it's $1,800 per person. In Washington, it's $1,300. In Oregon, it's $1,270. In Colorado, it's a little over $1,000. And in Texas, it's $835. So Minnesota is real generous in terms of the overall money that's going into these local units of government. But alas, this
maybe there's something else going on there, Brian. Maybe there's other variables. But we'll come back to that after the break. We have Amity Schles, who's on the line now, and she has a limited amount of time, so we want to get to her. We'll come back to some of those Minnesota-based and local issues in just a moment. But as I mentioned, she's the author of The Forgotten Man, a well-selling book that's out in bookstores everywhere now, and it's a fresh look at the Great Depression. And she is somebody who has a tremendous background. She has been an editor on the board of editors on a number of organizations. She has served as a senior fellow on the Council on Foreign Relations. She's been a syndicated columnist for Bloomberg. She's written for the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal. She's also an editorial board member there, as well as for The New Yorker, written Fortune magazine, National Review, and many, many others. Ms. Schles, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Good Morning Minnesota.
Oh, good morning to you.
Now, this is an interesting book. There's a kind of an established a version of history from the Great Depression, events leading up to it, during, and after it. You've taken a little different interpretation of it, a little different areas of emphasis. Share with us how your impressions and your conclusions might be different than the common ones, or the ones that are repeated over and over in the general media.
Well, there were two things, and they actually both had to do with things you were talking about earlier in the broadcast. The first is The Greatest Generation. Where did Americans get the character they had to be in the war and after? And I think most of the standard histories of the Depression tend to look at the importance of government in that period. And what I did in The Forgotten Man was look at the strength of the individual. And a lot of the things that we rely on today came out of that period. One of them is the self-help group. When you get together with another group and talk over your problems without a clergyman present and solve it together. And in the book, I talk about how Bill W. founded Alcoholics Anonymous, and also quite a bit about a black cult leader called Father Divine, and how he preached through his own gospel of plenty that people could get through the period. And I think we all knew that history, but it was submerged subordinated to the traditional history of, the New Deal did it all. And the second is the role of government in our lives, and you were just talking about the towns. Before the Great Depression, the federal government was less important than the states and towns, even in the early parts of the Depression. And it was only with Roosevelt's great second campaign that he started to spend more from Washington than the states and the localities were spending. And the government put its hand, its face, into the towns. And I'm looking right now at a book of Minnesota at some PWA buildings, part of the New Deal that were built, an armory in Minneapolis, in Hibbing, Minnesota, a memorial building. I don't know all these towns, but all that money came from Washington, just as now you're talking about money coming from the state to the locality, and buildings were built, and they were lovely buildings, but it did change the relationship of the locality in Washington forever.
Now, you suggest in this book that some of the government's actions may have actually prolonged or worsened the Depression. Can you shed some additional light on that perspective?
Oh, absolutely. You know, economists already know that. In fact, many people said, you're so unoriginal when I wrote that. The reality is that the New Deal was counterproductive. It didn't help the economy. In fact, it hurt the economy. Probably the Depression would not have lasted so long had they left the private sector alone. The sin of the New Deal, it was inspiring to be sure, but the sin of it was that it assumed that Americans can't pull out of things themselves, that businesses are not where growth inheres, that government is where growth inheres. That's what they thought, especially the latter half of the Depression from 36, 39. That whole period was definitely caused by Washington scaring business to death, and people knew it at the time. I think it basically breaks down. If you're in business or you're in economics, you know it. If you're a lawyer, you don't, if you want to know where this culture is, because the legal culture is definitely, the New Deal was great and it saved us, and then there's some arguments that attend that, but economists already know this.
Now, we're talking to Amity Schles, who's the author of the hot-selling book, The Forgotten Man, a sort of a different take on the causes for and effects of the Great Depression. And you just mentioned this comment about the government's actions perhaps extending or worsening the Depression, and economists know that. What basis or kind of theory or data do they have or do you have to support that so that our listeners can know it's more than just a claim?
An allegation, right. Well, if you look at the Dow is, there's 1 meter by which Roosevelt did great. And I don't kill Roosevelt in this book. I don't think he's horrible. I just want to point out his very serious limits. You look at the polling measure. Well, he polled great. He won 46 out of 48 states. That was historic in 36. We all respect that. We understand he meant a lot to people. But there were two other meters by which you could judge the performance on the economy of the administration. One was the Dow, which at that point was still around half what it had been under Herbert Hoover, who has such a bad reputation, and unemployment. When Roosevelt was running for re-election, imagine Bush running for re-election with 2 in 10 unemployed, 20%. And historically, we learned that some of that is international economics and some of it's monetary. But what I discovered when I went back to the period was that it was also just really bad policy. They told businesses that the businesses couldn't be in charge. The government had to be in charge. That's what the National Recovery Administration, which was the centerpiece of the New Deal, was. They told them they couldn't charge low prices. Because there were a number of crazy economic fallacies that even if you're a left Democrat, you would admit were a fallacy now, such as if there is a deflation problem, people can't charge low prices from their stores because that makes the deflation worse. So you can't compete. People were prosecuted and sent to prison for charging too low prices at a time when everyone is poor. And as you know, there's also the ag component where they, on the concept that still operates today in ag, that too much supply is the great evil, they curtailed supply at a time that people were hungry. And at the time, there was what I discovered going back was there's a lot of protest about this. People knew at the time that the policies were crazy. The crazy aspect of the ag was people were hungry and they slaughtered 6 million pigs early. And those pigs didn't grow up and there wasn't that pork. And, you know, they plowed cotton under, as many people in your state will know. And some of those principles were just wrong. It was hard on the farms, but there were other components of the economy. And it was very much, I would say, too pro-farm and too little pro-growth. Some of those farmers were moving to the city. Maybe they should have moved to the city. You know, we look back now, but overall, generally, I'll just say this. We look back, when they were in the Depression, they thought it was forever. And we look back now and we know that it was just really a bad blip. When you go 70s, 80s, 90s, you see the growth that we have. The natural state of the American economy is to grow with periodic recessions, but it grows. And then the idea was, the market does not work.
Now, I know you got to go in just a minute, but very quickly, on the issue of the, not the economics, but the character of the nation, you talked about the strength of the character of the individuals involved, and I presume that that's a bright spot and something that maybe you're concerned about the government suffocating that, but obviously individuals and communities and families more than rose to the occasion in inspiring ways during the Depression.
Well, these are our parents and grandparents, and they did lead, and they did it often by themselves and not just with the New Deal, but also by themselves. I especially loved Bill W., I have to say, the AA founder, who was a Wall Street man before he was such an alcoholic that went and founded AA. And he said, we can get through this together. And all of us now, we wonder if we have the fortitude that they had. So I go back and look at them, try to learn about the way they were so my children can be more like them.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and sharing with us the highlights of the book. It's called The Forgotten Man. The author is Amity Schles, and we appreciate you taking the time and sharing that perspective with us, and hope you have a great weekend.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, there we go. Now, Brian, before we go to our break, we want to make sure that people remember that this is the World War II dedication tomorrow, as we said earlier, 2 o'clock at the state capitol. And you've got some war stories there, I think, that relate to the war overall, and a couple from Minnesota that are very interesting.
I do. I don't know if I have time to squeeze these in, but there's a story. I've been doing some research on the World War II generation and some great Minnesota stories. And there's an amazing story of a 19-year-old man from West Duluth, Mike Calillo. And he's in Germany, and this is about 6 months after D-Day. And his unit is moving into Germany, and they're pinned down by German fire. and he inspires his company. They don't want to move. They're stuck. They're pinned down. He inspires his company to jump up and get behind him and get behind some moving tanks. So they're moving forward. They're firing on the enemy when a piece of shrapnel hits his gun, and his gun is useless. So his gun is out. So he runs up and jumps onto a moving tank, and he asks the soldiers in the tank if he can use their machine gun on top of the tank. So he's riding fully exposed on this tank, firing at the enemy. The machine gun jams. So he asks the soldiers in the tank if they have anything else. They give him a Thompson gun, a submachine gun. So he jumps off the tank, keeps going, firing. Finally, they run out of ammunition, and one of their soldiers is injured, and he takes that soldier and drags him 100 or 200 yards to safety. And his fellow soldiers had seen this, and they nominated him for the Medal of Honor. And when they nominated him for the Medal of Honor, he said, "What's the Medal of Honor?" And he was just a humble guy. And he said later on, years later, when he's retired in Duluth, and he's still alive today, that, you know, so many people did the same thing that he did, but there were just people there that happened to see it.
Yeah.
And it's just a really amazing, inspiring story. I think he was one of four Minnesotans who received the Medal of Honor during World War II, and just a great story.
And there are so many of those stories across Minnesota, and the Minnesota twist on it is often modesty or humility or a humbleness. You certainly you see that in all of the veterans, but in Minnesota, there's this great quote I saw the other day from a person who was commenting on being called the greatest generation. And in typical Minnesota fashion, he said, "Well, I think we're at least the pretty good generation," which is a great, I think, a great Minnesota way to
put
it.
Well, and we also noted as we were doing research that Charles W. Lindbergh, who's not related to the famous aviator, but also a Minnesotan now, lives in Richfield, was one of the gentlemen, one of the Marines, who was raised the first flag at Iwo Jima. And we talked about maybe, you know, it's Minnesota karma that the Minnesota soldier who was involved was part of the flag raising that was less famous at the time. But today he's the lone survivor of the 12 people that participated in either the first or the second flag raising on Mount Suribachi in Iwo Jima. And he's another great war hero and a great Minnesotan. And he's going to be at the memorial service on Saturday
as
well.
And I think something like 2/3 or 3/4 of his unit were either killed or wounded, either in the taking Mount Suribachi or in subsequent fighting on Iwo Jima. It's an amazing story. And, of course, whether individuals are part of those amazing stories or part of the broader story, we appreciate each and every one of them, the ones that are still here and, of course, the ones that are no longer with us in this life, but we're grateful for them. And, Brian, again, I want to make sure people know that at 2 o'clock tomorrow on this Capitol grounds, we hope that you'll come. And if you can't be there as part of the dedication, the thank you, that you'll at least pause and reflect in your own way with gratitude for these wonderful men and women who have served our country so well. Good morning, Minnesota, broadcasting from Sartell, Minnesota, at the Boy Scouts headquarters and facilities here for the Central Minnesota Boy Scouts. What a great program that is as well, and we're grateful for their hospitality. But we're joined now by the mayor of the city of Sartell, Mayor O'Driscoll. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Minnesota. Good morning, Sartell.
Now, you have been a lifelong resident of Sartell, going to the Sartell public school system. Of course, you went away for a little while when you were at St. Cloud State, or maybe you commuted. I don't know.
It's such a geographic distance.
Yeah, and you've been a teacher. You've been involved in training manager in the private sector. You've been on the city council, and now, of course, recently elected the mayor of this city. One of the incredible characteristics of the city is the explosive growth, 40% growth just since the year 2000, something like 80% growth since 1980. I know that comes with opportunities and some challenges. Talk to us a little bit about what you have to balance when you have that explosive growth.
We have to balance a lot of our municipal services, police, fire, infrastructure. People are just amazed at the cost of putting down roads and putting sewer and water into neighborhoods, doing upgrades where roads that could have been two lanes now need to be four lanes because of growth, and keeping up with the growing needs of a community. And we're not different than any other state across our city, I should say, across the state of Minnesota, who have those same types of challenges. But we have had some very big explosive growth, even in the last 7 years, where we've increased population by 40%.
The mayor will be with us for a little bit here on the show, but if you want to call in and badger McClung about legislative issues, if you've got compliments, I'll take those. But if you've got complaints, McClung will take those. But
thank you.
Here are the numbers if you'd like to call in and join us on Good Morning Minnesota later in this segment. In Greater Minnesota, you can call toll-free 1-866-989-9226. Again, 1-866-989-9226. In the metro area, you can call either 612 or 651. And same number, 989-9226. And call in on anything you'd like. We'd be happy to hear from you with got reflections about the World War II veterans, if you've got concerns about state issues, feel free to give us a call. Mayor, one of the things that you have been talking about is growth, but also there's a strong history here. We're here to help celebrate 100 years of your city, the centennial celebration taking place with the lots of events this weekend, over the summer, of course, into the fall, but this weekend really a focal point for you. Let's start with the history. What are some of the best memories or best kind of historical insights that you have from Sartell?
We're in such a unique location here in the state of Minnesota in Sartell, where we have three different rivers that actually flow through our community at this point, the Mississippi, the Sauk River, and the Watab River. And those have provided for me quite a lot of boyhood memories, almost the idea of Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer as you go up and down the creek, and we've caught crayfish, and my dad, who was the former police chief, said stay away from the creek because I don't want to have to come by and visit with you about not being too close to the water and some of those types of things. Yeah. And so
now your dad is here, of course,
yeah,
the retired police chief, and he was sharing with me off air some of you. At first he thought it was just you liked a skinny dip, and then he later realized you had some deep-seated pathology.
Governor, I can't thank you enough for coming to Sartell. Can't thank you enough for coming to Sartell, Governor.
Yeah, but you do, the rivers are a natural resource and an asset for the community, and it's been used initially in lumber. Now you're using it for development and tourism opportunities, recreational opportunities as well.
Governor, as you know, the paper industry in the state of Minnesota has had its ups and downs with some of the northern part of the state with some of the mills. And we have a large paper-producing mill here in Sartell, the Versal Paper Company. And those folks have a long, deep history as well. They are 101 years old, where the city is 100 years old. So that just tells you how closely we are tied to the paper industry. And Matt Dezurek, who is a legend in the community, used to work for that organization. At the time, it was called the Watab Pulp and Paper Company. And in his off time, he would actually make the replacement valves and different mechanical devices that were used in the milling process. And he actually grew that into another business, which is the Dezurek Water Valve Company, which is now part of the landscape and has been for a number of years in the city of Sartell. So it's kind of the idea of the mother of necessity, where one business needs something, another one can provide that for the community. So that's a very nice success story for our community.
Now, in the community, of course, is nearby two very significant roadways, Highway 10 and also 94 is not far away. And you've got a lot of events coming up this weekend where people are moving around Minnesota or looking for something to do with the family. Talk to us a little bit about some of the community events that are unfolding today, Saturday and Sunday, that people may want to check out.
Well, starting tomorrow morning, Governor, at 10 o'clock, we have our centennial parade. And one of the kind of unique things that is going to happen, in that parade is you were mentioning earlier in your remarks to folks here at our breakfast about you had attended the St. Paul Cathedral 100-year dedication or rededication of that facility in St. Paul. And a group that performed there was the Minnesota Pipe Band, Police Pipe Band, and we were actually able to get those folks to be a feature in our parade here as well.
Oh, terrific.
And so we really enjoy having them as a part of our team. We also will have some family fun activities. Tomorrow evening we're going to have fireworks and just a real nice hometown feel. We also have our Sartell All-City Reunion, Part 1 and Part 2. Part 1 starts tonight. Sunday afternoon is Part 2 up in our Northside Park, where we're going to be having an old-time baseball game. All the old rules, all the old, I don't want to say old players, but playing by the old rules.
Great.
And we also are going to have our Sartell Muskies take on the St. Stephen Steves, which is part of our same school district, the community of St. Stephen and the community of Sartell, joined together back in the late 1960s to form a school district and get a state approval to be able to become School District 748 here in the state of Minnesota.
So there's a great set of weekend activities, the ones the mayor mentioned, and more. So if you are looking for something to do this weekend, not far off of Highway 10, off Minnesota 15, or 94, off 94 as well, and it's in central Minnesota, an easy drive from most
Absolutely.
Of the rest of the state. And so check it out this weekend, the 100th anniversary, the centennial of this great city of Sartell. But now let's transition to another Sartell resident, Rick Stang, who brings with us a lifelong resident, but many skills and gifts and talents as well. He's been involved in this community in a variety of capacities, but one gift he has is music and singing. And Rick, you also are a former United States Marine, and we're very grateful for your service and what that
You're
represents
welcome.
As well. Now, what you may not know is we've kind of hoodwink the mayor into getting you two to sing as part of our greater Good Morning Minnesota tradition.
This isn't the first time he's done
the
this.
High school fight song. So now before we do that, though, Rick, let's just talk a little bit about your reflections of the city on its 100th anniversary.
Well, it's amazing for me, like you say, lifetime resident, that watching this community grow from farm fields to kind of a small mega industry, very small, but the community, the people, just growing up through the school system, that when you knew everybody in your class, to now my kids are in classes of 200 plus in their class, and it's just amazing. That amazes me the most, I guess. But
terrific. Well, and then when you were in high school, you were obviously involved in lots of things, and you probably remember, I hope you remember the high school fight song, because that's one of the reasons we have you up here. Are you ready to roll with that?
Yep, and I recruited Tim to help me with it because I didn't know the lyrics. So.
All right. Now, and the mascot for the high school is?
Sabres. It's actually a couple sabres on a shield, and so it's called the Sartell Sabres.
Now, we in South St. Paul, we were the Packers. We had the meatpacking plants, but our mascot was the cow. So we would get ridiculed and we were mocked. Yes, we would go to other schools and our cow would come skating out and people would kind of snicker at us, but it made us a little insecure, I think. But
in India, that would have been a really big mascot.
The
cow is sacred.
Yes, that's right. All right, so let's have it, the Sartell fight song. Mayor, you slide over, put that microphone right between you and Rick. And Rick, make sure you don't carry the whole thing.
Okay.
I was sitting next to the mayor when we sang America. You sang America the Beautiful this morning, right?
Yep.
And the mayor can carry a tune, but let's see if he can do it twice. Go ahead, guys.
Sure. March on, march on to victory, loyal sons of the varsity. Fight on for Sartell, for the glory of the blue and the white. Fight, fight, march on, march on to win the game. Down the field fighting all the way. We're with you, team, fighting team. Hear our song and cheer along and help us win the victory. S-A-B-R-E-S, yay, Sabres!
All right. Wow.
This is an amateur hour, McClung. That's like a barbershop quartet almost.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I
should say.
They'd almost brought a recording and played it, but that was really good.
Way to go, guys. That's outstanding. Well, now, before we let you go and before we continue on with the rest of the show, we want to, as you look forward, it's great to look back 100 years, great tradition, great history. Mayor, if you had to fast forward in speculate, guess what's going on here 100 years from now in Sartell and surrounding areas. So what's your best guess?
Well, first,
and we're going to record this and put it in a time capsule and see if you're right.
Well, when you and I both come back to celebrate the Sartell Bicentennial, is that what you're referring to, Governor? I see the city being near 45 to 50,000 people without a doubt. Central Minnesota is a very desirable place to live, raise a family, to be outside of the metro ring. You had been here in previous engagements, and you talked about how important the entire state of Minnesota is, and you've encouraged people to drop their roots where they feel comfortable, and a lot of people feel comfortable out in greater Minnesota, and we see this as being a nice stopover from the Lakes area in Minnesota to the Twin Cities marketplace as well, and we think that we're going to be seeing 50, 60,000 people. We're going to be seeing a lot of other services. We're going to look a lot like the Northern Metro, the Plymouth Maple Grove area.
I shouldn't say this with St. Cloud Mayor David Kleiss here, but do you get a lot of people who are living in Sartell but commuting into St. Cloud, perhaps, or have some other connection to St. Cloud? In other words, is there some synergy between St. Cloud and Sartell, maybe like a suburb in a little larger city nearby?
Mayor Kleiss would like to think so, but we always just remind Mayor Kleiss that it's the Central Minnesota area, Sartell, St. Cloud, and others. But no, and all good jest to the good mayor of St. Cloud. We do have a prospering economy in Sartell and Central Minnesota, and we see a lot of people who either live in St. Cloud and now are working in Sartell or are working in St. Cloud and living in Sartell. It's a very, very integrated economy. I've got good friends in all of our neighboring cities, and we work together on collectively, which I know you appreciate, on common issues. The legislature appreciates, and so we hope to be able to continue that tradition in Central Minnesota as well.
Outstanding. Well, that's Sartell Mayor Tim Driscoll and lifelong resident Rick Stang singing their high school fight song, providing us a little perspective and context for the city, its growth, its history, and its future. And gentlemen, we thank you very much for coming on Good Morning Minnesota and for all the great hospitality you've given us this morning.
Governor, thank you for the invitation to be on your show, and we appreciate having you in Sartell, Minnesota today.
Outstanding. Thank you so much.
There you have it.
Now, Brian, there's other things in the news and going on in Minnesota that will just kind of cover the waterfront here a little bit. One is something near and dear to your heart since you're a baseball fanatic, and Joe Mauer's back.
I'm excited. Joe Mauer's back. He's back this weekend. I'm going to go to the game on Sunday. And he was batting 353 when he was injured, so I think he's leading the American League. Now, there are some critics that say he doesn't play as many games as some other players, so maybe he shouldn't be in the running for the batting crown like he was last year. But there's a statistical number that they actually use, so he clearly should be. And it's going to be great to have him back. Now, I think over the long run, there's still going to be a debate about should you move Joe Mauer to third base, should you, you know, make him a DH, should you do something to get him out of that catcher's position where he's more prone to injury and it's a little more strain on him. But he's such a good defensive catcher, and he's so good at handling the pitchers. I think it's important to have him back there as long as possible. So he's going to be back. That's going to be good news for the Twins. Carlos Silva pitching tonight, so we'll see what happens.
All right. And then you also, of course, are a fan of not just Joe Mauer, but we have the Twins overall doing better than they were early on, and that's a good sign. Still not where you want them to be, but they certainly are better than they were a month ago.
They're at 500 now, so they're back to 500. They're doing all right. You know, Kevin Slowey, the new pitcher that they called up, has had a couple of good outings. The second one wasn't as good as his first, but he got a win, and he got his first win out there, so that's a good sign. And, you know, they have to get the bats going from guys like Nick Punto and Jason Bartlett, who had higher averages last year than they do this year. They got to get those piranhas on base, and that'll help them out. But we'll see what happens there. And then yesterday in baseball news also, Curt Schilling nearly had a no-hitter. He went down. He had two outs, bottom of the ninth. I have to admit, Governor, I did flip the TV in my office from CNN over to ESPN just for a few minutes to watch a little bit of that. And Curt Schilling, he's had a great career, maybe not a Hall of Fame career yet, but, you know, came within one out. And then a former Minnesota Twin, Shannon Stewart, got a hit off of him in the ninth inning to ruin it. Still pitched a great game, but it's got to be tough when you get that close to a no-hitter.
Well, and on the Minnesota Wild front, of course, the team that defeated the Minnesota Wild, the Anaheim, they used to be called the Mighty Ducks. Now I guess they're just the Ducks. But they go on to win the Stanley Cup, which is some minor consolation to us Wild fans because we ended up being beat by the ultimate Stanley Cup champions. But they are a good team, a tough team. And while I love our Minnesota Wild, they got a little ways to go if they want to get to that level. But hats off to the Ducks. They're a very good and tough team. Good morning, Minnesota. We're broadcasting live from Sartell in the Central Minnesota Boy Scouts headquarters. Brian McClung and I wrapping up the show. But before we do, let's go to the phone lines. John in Harris, Minnesota. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Governor. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Hey, I was just wondering, there's two boys that were on the Anaheim team that are from Minnesota. Mike Max had one on last night, and I can't remember his name, and the other was from the St. Cloud area, I believe. And the couple be in Minnesota for a couple days, and I was wondering if you were going to try and meet up with those gentlemen and maybe get a look at the cup again.
Well, I would be honored to, but, you know, it's their day with the cup. Each player gets a day with the Stanley Cup. We don't want to interfere with that, but I have been in the presence of the cup a few times, and I have to say I was in awe of it. They brought it into my office this year, and a few years ago the gentleman brings it in with the white gloves, and there's a certain, you know, solemnity to to being around the cup. But I would be delighted to receive it and see it again, but I don't want to interfere with the day that they'll have with the cup for sure. Let's go to Gail in, looks like, I can't quite read the city, but let Gail on whatever line she's on. Go ahead, Gail.
Yes, I was wondering what's latest on the proposal to exempt military retired pay from state taxes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Gail. I thought you were calling in as a female. So there's a male version of Gail as well, so I apologize for that. But the latest version is we proposed that 2 years in a row, and the legislature, particularly my friends on the other side of the aisle, have not seen fit to advance that, but we're going to continue to push it. And it's the proposal is to give an exemption from Minnesota taxation for military pay or retirement pay, and many other states do this. I think we should too, but we'll continue to push it, and hopefully we can get it done in one of these coming years. And then lastly, with just the seconds we have left, Bob Fueling joins us, who came of age as a young boy during World War II. And Bob, you, a member of our audience this morning, had a couple of reflections about what it was like to grow up in those times as we think about our World War II veterans this weekend.
Well, I had six uncles in the Second World War, and I was 6 years old when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. And I remember it was like yesterday, and I remember Roosevelt coming on the air and declaring war on Japan. And then everybody, and I mean everybody, and like I was six, I saved my nickels for war bonds. We collected scrap iron. We collected tin cans. Everybody, we had projects in school. You just went, and we lost 357,000 Americans in that war, if you remember, and 80 million people died in that war. But what a good country we are, and what a good area I live in. The best area in the world is Minnesota.
Great way to summarize it. That's why they called it the People's War. The whole country went all in, everybody for the duration. We're grateful for all of them. This is going to have to do it for Good Morning Minnesota. Thank you to Sartell for the hospitality. Hope you tune in with us next Friday, 9 a.m. Thanks for listening.